For many people out there, a career in law is the goal. But if you're blind or partially sighted, does that throw up any barriers or obstacles when you are studying or indeed when you are practicing? Well, we have with us Halima Farooq, who is doing just that. Halima, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Alan. You know, I'm delighted to be here.
Where did the idea come from to pursue that particular career? How did that start?
So I've always liked public speaking. I just really like the whole engagement and talking to people. I think there's pros and cons. I did used to find it difficult when I was trying to speak to people and they would sort of look over their shoulder and not know whether I'm looking at them. So the eye contact side of things, I really struggled with. But at the same time, it's been a blessing in disguise because it means that I can address very large groups of people without feeling the same sort of pressure that someone fully sighted might. And so, you know, I chose a career at the bar where you talk for a living.
Did you think, how am I going to do this? How am I going to fare with the studies? No, not in terms of how difficult they're going to be, but in terms of, will my sight get in the way or will other people see my sight loss as a barrier?
In terms of studying, it was difficult and I didn't make it easier for myself by not accepting the support that was available. But that wasn't because I was like, oh, I don't need it. It wasn't that. It was just that I didn't realize how much I did need it, if that makes sense. And so when I started my first year at my undergraduate degree, I don't know how I got through that year. Alan, I'll be completely honest with you. I didn't used to use my cane and I was going into the wrong rooms. And then it was until I actually did some work experience with a blind judge, Judge John Lafferty. And he gave me the most practical advice, which is that, you know, everyone has challenges, but finding a practical solution to your challenge, you're halfway there of solving your problem. And so I really sort of took that and I applied it to the situation at the time. And I decided to move on to campus for my second year of university. And I just found that so useful because at the time I was traveling to uni and I don't live far from the university, but it's one of those awkward situations where it's easier to get there by car than it is public transport. I was like, right, we're going to move on to campus, cut out the sort of 4-hour journey round trip that I was doing. And that just it empowered me to try and look for other things to make my life a bit easier. And so that's when I also made the decision to go up to each of my lecturer and say, my name's Halima, I will be sat on your left. I'll always be in the front row and I'm visually impaired. And the university would also receive a sort of disability student guide kind of thing. So the disability department would send my lecturers that. So they would know of me on paper. And then I took the decision to go introduce myself. And that meant to me that, right, you're taking things into your own hands. And that really helped me. And then my third year, I did a placement year in Parliament. That's where I used my white cane because, you know, Parliament is quite a beast itself and it's, you know, full of glass doors and massive staircases. And that's where I sort of really realized that, you know, wow, this really helps. And so I took the decision that when I go back to university to complete my undergraduate degree in my fourth year, that I'm going to use my white cane full time. I remember I was at a train station once and I was like, oh, what platform does train to XYZ go from? And they just pointed at a sign. And then you just have the, you know, actually I'm visually impaired, blah, blah, blah. And then they feel horrible. But I was like, you know what? If I have my cane, it just addresses the elephant in the room. I think the more that I started becoming confident in my own skin and accepting my visual impairment and realizing that it's not actually going anywhere, I just need to do what I can with the sight that I have, whatever happens will happen.
Were you embarrassed to be seen with your cane or use assistive tech? You know, were you trying to fit in and not use things like that?
I was embarrassed to begin with, and that's only because I come from a South Asian background and disability isn't something that's really spoken about. So the odd times that I would use my cane, the amount of stairs that I would get, and you know, it's like, oh, you know, how do you know they're staring at you? It's because you can feel it. You can, your face goes hot, and you can feel that everyone is just looking at you. And I wear a headscarf, and you don't see a Muslim white cane user running about. But since I've started being more confident, you know, my cane is the first thing you see when I sort of walk through the door, literally and metaphorically.
Do you use any kind of assistive technology then for your studies?
I use Zoom Text. I find that quite useful because it's both visual and audio. So you can zoom out whenever you want and you can listen at the same time as well. All my books at law school were electronic. So lawyers, they're known for, you know, having little suitcases with them. And it's not because they're pompous or anything like that. It's because they've got massive law books in there, like the biggest volume you can think of. They have to lug it around with them because that has the up-to-date law in it. But mine are all electronic. So it was funny, at bar school, I took a picture of my iPad next to my friend's humongous law book, and he had to sort of bring that into class every day. And there's me just turning up with my little iPad. And then for my exams, I always sit my exam in a separate room, and that's because my exam paper is printed in A3 and it's so big, and that I also have a reader who reads the exam to me. So, you know, you couldn't have someone like me sit in a massive hall with everyone else.
How supportive were the uni then in terms of getting everything for you? Because it sounds like it's been quite positive.
From school, when I was in my secondary school, I was given a sort of support teacher. So all my teachers would contact her. They would send her like the PowerPoints and piece like Word documents, and she would sort of remove all the colours that weren't compatible and would find better pictures and stuff. And she was the one who was always like adjusting all my exams, all the material for class. And then we were also learning Braille together as well. So from my school experience was just brilliant, you know. She was also the one who I think she's seen the positive and negative side of me, because when I was at school, I was also bullied. People thought that I was faking being blind. I'm not quite sure how you can fake being blind, but you know, I'm sure every sort of individual with either a visual impairment or disability has gone through this. So it was really upsetting, and she was there for me in those times as well. And then what I learned from school in terms of how my adjustments were, I sort of implicated that at university. So I got in touch with the disability department and got all these things set up. And then when I finally kicked myself up the backside, I was like, okay, you can't be just winging it anymore. You need a note taker in class because you are missing what is on the board. I just started being a bit more independent in my second year of university, and the university were brilliant.
When you were called to the bar, what was that like?
The journey getting there was quite stressful because I had to retake a few of my bar exams because I was one of the unlucky ones that got hit with COVID. Everything went remote. You know, you would assume that, oh, it's good for people with a disability, but it then meant that there was a lot of screen time, and I struggle with that. You know, my eyes get really hot and I get migraines. And so there was a shift, a really sort of quick shift that everyone had to get used to. But when I finally got called to the bar, it was delightful. It really was. Me, my mum, my brother and my sister went up to London, and there was a whole sort of ceremony, and I kept crying, and I was like, you know, I need to stop because I've got wonderful makeup on and my makeup's going to get ruined. And that's where when we were taking my professional pictures, you sort of take two pictures. You take one on your own and then you take the other one with your family. And when I was taking the one on my own, they gave me the little rolled up fake degree to hold, and I was like, I quite like to hold my cane actually. And then in my family picture, I held the little scroll degree thingy, but it meant a lot to me that I hold my cane in my individual picture, because that is my picture. It shows you all your little attributes, all your challenges, the challenges that you've faced as a Muslim, blind, Pakistani, British woman.
What's the next step then? Where do you go from here?
So currently, I've been called to the Bar of England and Wales, and I am an unregistered barrister. In order to become a registered barrister, I need to obtain something called a pupillage. Pupillage is like the training contract side of things. It's the 1 year practical training that you need. And the process for that is equally as tough. I applied this year and I wasn't successful. I don't think I was. And so we will apply again next year and we will keep applying until we get it. It's just the way things are, because everyone that didn't apply last year, they're also applying. And those that didn't get it the year before, they're also applying. So your time will come. And then in the meantime, I'm working as a casework officer for the Kent Police and Crime Commissioner, where I'm getting a lot of hands-on experience. And it links with the kind of work that I want to do in the future.
There's probably people out here listening to this, Halima, who are thinking, even just going to uni, you know, is a kind of, oh, can I do it? You know, if I'm blind or partially sighted, there may even be some who are thinking mm-hmm. about, can I even do law? I mean, you'd obviously, you know, this test here, you've done it, you've been through it. What would you say to people?
I'm a strong believer in whatever's written for you is written for you. So if you try to avoid it now, it will come again later, you know, so you might as well just go for it. Just let the chips lie where they will. You know, whatever's going to happen will happen. You can't change that, especially your disability. I'm a Muslim and I pray, I try to do my best to pray 5 times a day. And every time I pray that my eyesight gets better. But realistically, I know that that's not going to change. Although my faith is there, you have to be realistic at the same time as well. And you know, my sight might not get better. And I've been told by doctors that I could completely lose my sight in the future as well. So whatever's going to happen is going to happen. You can't let that stop you from living your life. And I know that sounds cliche, but that's literally, that would be my best advice, is that go for it. You know, that's a nice full circle. It goes back to the advice that Judge Lafferty gave, which was, you know, just find a solution.
Halima, best of luck with the career. And thank you for talking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much, Alan. It's been a pleasure.